This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending 14th of January 2022. Hello. And welcome to the Winchester Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle dated the 13th of January 2022, which this week has been edited by Sue Frayne, Anne Brew and Jane Thomas. Your readers today are Tony Bergstrom.
Hello.
John Richards.
Hello.
And Peter Walker.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, John Parker. The main headlines this week are Council's Lease Unlawful, Vaccine Centre marks milestone of 75,000 jabs, and blind man and his dog bumped by students. So we start with the first story behind the first headline.
Council's lease unlawful. Winchester City Council has acknowledged the unlawfulness of its decision to hand over the city's redundant leisure centre site without giving residents the chance to have their say on the plans. Campaign group Friends of River Park told the council last month that it was seeking a judicial review over plans to lease the River Park Leisure Centre RPLC site to the University of Southampton to expand its Schools of Art campus. Winchester residents aired frustration about the level of public consultation before the plan to lease the site to the university was announced in November last year. But now the City Council has acknowledged that the decision to hand over the public-owned land was unlawful and conceded that it should have given the public notice in order for objections to be considered. In a letter seen by the Chronicle, the Council has said that the decision to lease the RPLC land will not be implemented and will be withdrawn at a meeting of the Cabinet on January the 25th. The chairman of Friends of the River Park, Sir Tony Walker, said if we are to have a say in the uses to which this exciting site is to be put, it is important for the community to register their objections to the proposed loss of their land to a private commercial entity. As soon as the council advertises its renewed proposals to dispose of the land, if they actually do, the Friends of the River Park will be registering theirs. In a statement, the campaign group added, however, despite having acted against the law and the public interest, they will still apparently intend to pursue the same decision, this time having given residents the opportunity to object to the proposal. It is not the first time that the council has faced a judicial review. These have included Councillor Kim Gottlieb's challenge over Silver Hill and the action over the new multi-storey car park at Bar End. A city council spokesperson said the council has received a pre-application letter, but no application for judicial review has been made at this time. The purpose of this type of letter is to identify matters in dispute and whether formal action can be avoided. The council will always seek to constructively engage with this process and avoid court proceedings, and this was the outcome on this occasion. The number of legal cases raised with the council over the past 3 years shows that we have successfully defended more than double the cases we have conceded. We can confirm that the intended disposal has been advertised in accordance with section 123(2)(a) of the Local Government Act 1972. The notice was published in the Hampshire Chronicle and will be advertised again this week. The council was asked how many legal cases it has defended and for clarification on the scope of the public notice for the disposal of the RPLC site, but it did not respond before the Chronicle went to print. The group said there has been a huge waste of taxpayers' money on consultants, technical reports, officers' time and resources, and lawyers in regard to projects failed because of unlawful decisions over the council-controlled land. Unwarranted delay to those projects is another consequence of the council's breaches of the law. You may be told by some to lay blame at the door of those with the courage to challenge those decisions. However, quite the opposite. They should be congratulated for protecting the interests of Winchester residents, especially in this latest attempt to preserve public land for public recreational use.
Vaccine centre marks milestone of 75,000 jabs. A vaccine centre near Winchester recently passed 75,000 jabs. Coldon Common Vaccination Centre opened in December 15th, 2020, as a dedicated vaccination hub, as a combined centre for Twyford, Bishop's Waltham, Bishopstoke and Wickham surgeries. The initial organisers were retired GP Mike Evans and Hale Wade, who is practice manager at Twyford Surgery. Once up and running, at an early stage, the organisation was taken over by Joe Beresford and Claire Jennings. Some staff were retired nurses, physios, doctors and paramedics. There were the clinicians, who were responsible for the medical overview on a daily basis, receptionists checking appointments, and stewards who were outside in all weathers. Retired nurse Penny Hegan said, "There was then a huge process arranging the vaccine and appointments. The patients who came in all weathers, mostly with a smile and very happy to be there, some of whom were very frightened of needles, but still came. It was sometimes very tiring, but the staff were some of the nicest people I've worked with during my 45-year career in the NHS. I have enjoyed it so much and will be able to look back on it with such pride and pleasure in the future. Sadly, the bungalow will close at the end of January the 1st. I sincerely hope we never need to do anything like it in the future." On January the 4th, the centre passed a total of 75,000 jabs.
Blind man and his dog bumped by students. A man from Winchester who is visually impaired has spoken of his upset after he was bumped into by students on three occasions while walking with his guide dog. Elliot Reynolds, who is legally blind, was walking on Stockbridge Road on January the 5th with his guide dog, Caddy, towards the city centre after getting off the bus when he was bumped into by groups of Winchester students. Mr. Reynolds said, "I am legally blind, and I have had my guide dog for the last 2.5 years. So between me coming out of the other side of the tunnel and reaching the crossroads, I was bashed into 3 times by groups of students. One of them bashed me pretty hard. Things like this can really knock my confidence, and is it too much to ask for people to give myself and my guide dog, who is in full harness, space to get by? So if you see someone with an assistance dog, please give them space to get by." Mark Sanderson, Deputy Director of Operations at Guide Dog South West, said, "We are concerned to hear that one of our guide dog owners has had this negative experience while out in their local community. Fortunately, these incidents are rare, but they can have a damaging impact on someone's confidence and independence. Our local team will provide support to Mr. Reynolds, and we would urge the public to please be considerate if they see someone walking with a white cane or guide dog." He posted about the incident on a Winchester Facebook group and received lots of comments supporting him. One lady commented, "I actually witnessed one group of teenagers bash right into you. I was shocked to see this happen. I was unable to do anything as I was a passenger in a car passing by, but I'm so sorry to see this has happened to you. I hope you and your dog are okay. Total lack of respect for anyone, let alone someone who is walking with a guide dog. Don't let this get you down."
That concludes the headline stories And we continue with the death announcements. Batchelor, Christine Ann Batchelor, on the 31st of December. Bates, Adrian Michael Buckland Bates, on the 1st of January, aged 85. Bishop, Catriona Ann Bishop, on the 10th of January, at the Laurels Nursing Home in Lancashire. Castle, Jean Ivy Castle, at Winchester Hospice, on the 21st of December, aged 75. Duke, Brian Bernard Duke, on the 3rd of January, aged 93. Giles, Audrey Giles, on the 31st of December at St Catherine's View Care Home, Winchester. Jowett, Robert E. Jowett, died in Ventnor, Isle of Wight, 8th of January. Leonard, Elizabeth Ann Leonard, at Belford House, 4 Marks, on the 4th of January, aged 81. Marsh, David Charles Marsh, at home on the 8th of January, aged 86. Palmer, Sheila Palmer, in Queen Alexandra Hospital on the 24th of December, aged 84. Proudman, Anthony Proudman, at home in Winchester on the 5th of January, aged 88. Shoya, David Hugh Victor Shoya, at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital on the 18th of December, aged 90. Simmons, Peter Jeremy Simmons, on the 23rd of December, at home. Taylor, Jill McPherson Taylor, at home on the 21st of December, aged 85. Watson, Andrew John Watson, at home on the 21st of December. And now we have Christian comment.
This is from Rosemary A. Baker, Epiphanies in the New Year. We are in the season of the church called Epiphany. This word means a moment of sudden and great revelation or realization. It refers here to the manifestation of Christ to the Gentiles, as represented by the Magi or wise men. Their journey following the star from their homelands to the stable at Bethlehem is often the inspiration for sermons on journeys. Not an inappropriate theme for the beginning of a new year, although perhaps not just about planning our summer holidays. Journeys usually imply travel of some sort, for example, from home to another destination, and usually by car, boat or plane, or a combination. They could, of course, be by bus, bike, horse, camel, or even on foot. There are, of course, non-travel journeys, although they all imply some sort of movement, not if not progress, towards a goal. There is the journey of life, the journey of faith, a weight loss journey, to name but a few examples. Last week, I embarked on a decluttering journey, although this could refer to my whole life. This was a very specific 5-day online course for an hour each day with homework. This was then to go on to other things. Friends, family and neighbours, old and new, may well doubt how much could be achieved in a week. Some wondering if 5 years would even be enough time. I found the course helpful. Not in that I had learned anything new, but I was reminded of many things I did know. The in phrase they used and asked about was having light bulb moments. Moments of inspiration when the way forward was suddenly clarified, or a solution to a sticking point became obvious, perhaps. In retrospect, these could be seen as small epiphanies. The most useful light bulb moment for me was realizing I had to break my task down, and then maybe again, so I planned to do manageable tasks that were in fact achievable. Reaching this conclusion has enabled me to reset my priorities and plan a roadmap to achieve my goals. One of the other things I appreciated was the support I received from both the organisers and the other participants. We were often told to be kind to ourselves. Some years ago, I was told by a ministerial colleague of a funeral he had taken, where one of the chosen hymns was, "As with gladness, men of old." It was in February, so he didn't think much about it. However, some months later, the spouse also died, and the same hymn was requested. It was only then that he studied the words of the last verses and discovered it was indeed appropriate for life's journey, or a journey of faith coming to its end. And that was Rosemary A. Baker.
Now we have letters to the editor of the Hampshire Chronicle. If you yourself would like to send a letter to the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by either telephoning 01962 860 836, that's 01962 860 836, emailing letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, that's letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or writing to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. That's 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. We've got 10 letters today. The first three inevitably are about River Park.
And here is the first letter about River Park, and it's entitled River Park. And it's from Justin Rolls. "Sir, I have been following the council's deliberations on the land at River Park and feel that the decision should be most heavily informed by the words of the council's own local plan. The plan is quite clear on the overall strategy for Winchester. It seems to me to support a Lido far more than a new building or several buildings. The Lido suggestion clearly has massive local support, as evidenced by the petition, which was signed by approaching 1 in 10 people living in the city. This support should be recognised and acted upon, as the plan states, quote, 'The city needs strong leadership prepared to make difficult choices, but before that, trust must be re-established, and this can be achieved by listening to people,' unquote. I understand that there is concern that the land is subject to flooding with river water. Bearing in mind that the Itchen is a navigable river in which people swim all year round without ill effects, there does not seem to be a justified objection here. However, if the land is built on, then any flooding will inevitably simply be displaced downstream. We have already seen parts of central Winchester by the City Mill and Water Lane flooded over recent years. Building on River Park would exacerbate that flooding. The plan also states that the city will, quote, 'tackle the climate crisis by building resilient communities that have learned to self-organise and work together, require development to be resilient to climate change challenges, innovative, energy-efficient, sustainably constructed and designed, and meet health and well-being needs,' unquote. A few decades ago, every substantial town across the south had a Lido. They were excellent places for young people to go, and those which still exist are very successful and valued. The centre of Winchester does not have an abundance of healthy activities for young people. Indeed, the removal of the swimming pool to Bar End has resulted in a situation where most will only be able to go if they are driven there. The local plan states the city will, quote, strengthen and create healthy communities that are connected with easily accessible open spaces and green stroke blue infrastructure and support sustainable travel choices, including walking and cycling. Aim to create communities that are focused on green spaces, reduces health inequalities, and creates a healthy environment in the district by having good access to services, schools, and facilities within walking distance. Unquote. I do not believe that either of these will be served by new buildings for the University of Southampton on the River Park site. I also understand that they have other sites available on which to build. There is nothing to stop them building an auditorium for the city elsewhere. A Lido would clearly count as valuable green stroke blue infrastructure if properly designed. A concert hall? An auditorium? A cultural quarter? Not really. If the city really means what it says in its own local plan, then the Lido plan is clearly preferable, and the decision would be a popular one. That letter is from Justin Rowles, Old Stoke Road, Stoke Charity.
And this letter from Lawrence Jones, also on the subject of River Park. Sir, following your leading article in the Hampshire Chronicle of December 30th, I should like to add my total support to the Friends of River Park, who are seeking a judicial review of the Council's plans. I fully agree with the reservations expressed in your article. The future of River Park should be decided by the Winchester community meeting their views and needs over this public park. These should include facilities not provided adequately by the new sports centre. In no way should this site be given over to Southampton University, who have no inherent right to take it on and do not have the Winchester interests as their prior objective. In earlier articles, there had been a suggestion a new access would be created to allow better access for the students to develop the nighttime economy. This is the last thing Winchester needs. I do not try to identify the community needs, but these views should be established by proper public debate. This from Lawrence Jones, Dean Lane, Week.
And the third letter, entitled River Park, is from K. Edwards. Sir, readers who are interested and or concerned at the future of the leisure centre and the proposals by the City Council to grant a 150-year lease to Southampton University may wish to look at the public notices on page 61 of Chronicle, dated January the 6th, 2022. Winchester City Council have published a notice of proposed disposal of open space land, known as the Skate Park and Riverside Indoor Bowling Club. The Council is proposing to enter into an agreement to grant a lease for a term of 150 years of the area described, which the notice states may or may not be open space, to the University of Southampton. The notice states the lease will contain terms to continue the current use of the land unless an equivalent alternative facility is provided. Interested parties have until 4 p.m. on the 4th of February to object to the proposed leasehold disposal. The notice indicates where objections should be sent to at the City Council. And this is from K. Edwards, Test Rise, Chilbolton.
Next letter, entitled Bleak Settlement, is from Alan G. Dowden, County Councillor for Baddesley Division, Borough Councillor for Valley Park Ward, Chairman of Valley Park Parish Council, Deputy Mayor of Test Valley Borough Council. Sir, the latest local government financial settlement for Hampshire County Council, unless it is amended by government before it is finalised, looks very bleak indeed. The net result of the settlement will mean that Hampshire County Council will have to take a further £21.5 million from balances for the coming year, even with the planned £40 million of cuts to services. As this is only a one-year settlement, once again, it isn't clear what the implications of this are for future years, but it is clearly not good. One political point is that the average Shire County increase in core spending power is 7.5%, yet for Hampshire it is just 6.3%. Why did our Hampshire Members of Parliament support these funding proposals for our county and therefore let their constituents down once again? When further cuts to services happen next year, remember the blame must be left at the door of our Tory MPs and the Tory administration at the County Council. That letter is from Alan J. Dowden. In fact, it's not, it's Alan G. Dowden, I beg your pardon. County Councillor for Baddesley Division, Borough Councillor for Valley Park Ward, Chairman of Valley Park Parish Council and Deputy Mayor of Test Valley Borough Council.
And on a completely different subject, this letter from Judith Martin is entitled Privatisation. Sir, needing a GP appointment with some urgency the other day, my husband was sent by St Clement's Surgery, where we've been registered for the last 40 years, to Badger Farm. We didn't expect he'd be able to see our own GP, and it was certainly out of hours. The appointment was fine, and we got the reassurance my husband needed. But when we looked at the prescription he'd been given, the doctor turned out to have come not from St Clement's, but from an organisation called Partnering Health Limited. Being suspicious about the creeping privatisation of the NHS, I thought I'd look them up. They are indeed a private company offering, quotes, general medical practice activities, unquote. They began life as Portsmouth Health Limited in 2008, when New Labour was encouraging competition in the NHS. By 2011, they had one contract for a GP surgery and made a post-tax profit of £102,000. In 2015, they made a loss, and in 2016, switched to become Partnering Health, specialising in out-of-hours provision. In 2019, the company came to include Roberto Colodangelo. If the name seems familiar, Mr. Colodangelo is the brother of Matt Hancock's assistant, who caused him to lose his ministerial post. But not until he had given enormous health contracts to friends and family. From a small, loss-making company, PHL has become the recipient of a multi-million pound government contract partnering the South Central Ambulance Service, part of a £68 million seven-year contract awarded in 2020, as well as evidently still providing out-of-hours GP services. Separately, a few days earlier, returning from Portugal, our two-day COVID tests were done by Randox, the company that undid MP Owen Paterson, and lost the Conservatives a rock-solid seat. Delivery of the completed tests to what looked like a dustbin in the car park at Sutton Scotney Services was farcical. We didn't have any choice in the matter. This is no way to protect the NHS or to spend public money. This from Judith Martin, Romsey Road.
And this is a letter from Peter Rees entitled COVID Attitude. Sir, the general air of complacency about COVID has already started to show its impact in Hampshire, reflecting a trend across the nation. Social distancing and mask wearing have all but disappeared from the government litany of persuasive messaging. Vaccination and booster jabs continue to be the significant line, and of course they should, but not at the expense of dismissing other personal responsibilities. Steve Bryan's attitude continues to raise serious concerns among the general population, with his undisguised preference for business and commerce not to be affected in any way at all in terms of footfall and usage. We all want a strong and vibrant economy, but his comments reflect his growing discomfort and barely disguised disdain with other things that really matter in society, the people and their state of health. Up to the end of December, approximately 16,189 cases of COVID-19 were reported in Hampshire. Up to the 3rd of 2022, there were 20,128, an increase of nearly 4,000. This put Hampshire in the deadliest top 25% of areas in the UK where the condition was spreading and increasing. Steve is on record as opposing his own Prime Minister, fully supporting the accelerated deregulation of all preventative measures by the local population. Clearly, the carefree attitude of many people and their marking the end of doing anything to help prevent, control and stop the airborne transmission of COVID-19 has taken over. This is the message locally from him. It is quite reprehensible and continues to fly in the face of the advice of the CMO. Steve Bryan was elected by a very slender majority by people in his constituency to represent them in Parliament. I suggest his position is untenable. Being an MP is about reflecting the views and opinions and wishes of their electorate as much as possible. It is also about encouraging strong personal responsibility, taking care of them through actions, and the statements he makes and his general demeanour requires leadership, now sadly lacking in his humiliating public downgrading of the safety of his constituents. And this is from Peter Rees, Monarch Way, Winchester.
Following on from that, this letter is entitled MP's Response. Sir, having read Martin Holmes's letter in the paper, Letters, January the 6th, I can only agree with him that our MP should apologise about his ill-judged remarks about his fellow MPs and indeed Sir Chris Whitty. I wrote to Mr. Bryan asking him to explain to me what had led him to hold the views that he does on COVID passports, the wearing of masks, and the management of the pandemic in general. I received a most surprising response from him, dismissing my question out of hand, and indeed not even attempting any explanation as to why he holds the views that he does. His only reassurance was that he is sure that the majority of his 75,000 constituents feel as he does, and he is speaking for them rather than me, and giving me a link to his speech in the Commons, which answered nothing. As I said in my reply to him, mine is one vote he's lost in his Winchester constituency. All I had asked for was a polite and rational response, and the one I got was anything but that. So disappointing. So writes Helen Etherington, St. Swithin Street, Winchester.
And this letter is from Kate McIntosh, MBE RIBA, which I think stands for the Royal Institute of British Architects, and it is entitled Derailed Plans. Sir, years ago, the RIBA identified that the realisation of a high-quality built environment required a collaborative and creative partnership between a skillful and committed team of architects and designers and a committed, well-informed and enlightened client. In Winchester, we had such a professional team in the John Thompson Partnership, who conducted the first and only genuine public consultation exercise I have experienced in 35 years as a citizen of Winchester, and continued to develop this into the supplementary planning document for the regeneration of Central Winchester. Where is this document now? It has, to all intents and purposes, been jettisoned, together with all the goodwill and commitment with which the citizenry brought into that consultation process. A different team of consultants has been brought in. These consultants may be competent enough in their own field, but every time there is a stalling, a backtracking, and a rebriefing, the new team have to retread the same learning process which was undertaken by their predecessors. It is immensely wasteful of time and expertise. Given the all too many examples of these ill-conceived false starts, some engaged in with little or insufficient prior consultation, it is a tragedy that the single example of a major regeneration which was proceeding along the right lines and had engendered public confidence has perversely been derailed, possibly because the second partner required for a high quality outcome, the enlightened client, is nowhere in sight. And say, this is from Kate McIntosh, MBE, RIBA, West End Terrace.
And this is a letter from George Spencer entitled Bus Woes. Sir, since the new year, Stagecoach have been utilising single-decker buses on the 64 route from Alton to Winchester, which prior to Christmas was predominantly worked by double-deckers during peak times. As such, it has been a thoroughly uncomfortable commute, especially since the buses in question have little to nothing in the way of legroom. I'm 6 foot 6 inches, and I've called the older style seats back breakers. Stagecoach have told me that this is due to a shortage of double-decker vehicles. But I've seen the 64-branded buses being utilised on short-haul runs to Stanmore, as well as sitting empty in the bus station. What makes things worse is that school has now started again, meaning that the bus is often full and standing by Medstead, and in my opinion there is no way that can be safe. Hopefully this is only temporary and things will be back to normal soon enough. But it currently seems as though a relatively comfortable commute is somehow too much to ask. And this is from George Spencer, Anstey Road, Alton.
And finally, a letter from Simon Lever entitled Ongoing Destruction of Chalk Streams. Sir, recently a water company was fined tens of millions of pounds for pumping raw sewage into rivers, eventually flowing into the sea. With billions earned by these companies, such fines are academic. There is the impression that executives responsible for such destructive decisions are unaffected by such penalties. Through what seems to be a lack of investment or care, water companies, in this case Southern Water, are responsible for continuing destruction of our cherished chalk-based rivers. The short and long-term damage will be unprecedented. Time for action. I stress the critical necessity for all parties to bring the water companies to account and save our treasured waterways. Meetings to discuss meetings will not be sufficient. Such a meeting must be held urgently, no excuse. Water companies must direct their high corporate earnings into creating effective systems to stop damaging our natural environment, and this must commence now. What the poet Keats would have thought as he walked along the banks of his favourite River Itchen, I dread to think. Future generations will not forgive such a lack of responsibility. That letter is from Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm.
Next we have the Hampshire Chronicle editorial, and that will be followed by letter from Westminster, and then First Person.
And the editorial comment is entitled Time Council Learnt from Court Challenges. Winchester City Council has acknowledged that it acted unlawfully when deciding to lease the River Park Leisure Centre land to the University of Southampton. The authority has admitted that it should have published a notice that it intended to dispose of the land prior to making the decision. How has this failure happened? It is not the first time that the council has been threatened with or faced legal action for a decision that it made about the future of publicly owned land. Surely the council should now have learned its lesson and would have checked with its legal teams before going ahead with a decision that will impact residents and the city. As the Friends of River Park say in our front page story, a lot of time and money has been wasted by the council in dealing with legal challenges. The council highlights that it has successfully defended more cases than it has conceded, but this does not seem like something it should boast about. Surely a good brag would be to say that it has not been taken to court at all.
And this is the letter from Westminster. A happy new year to all Hampshire Chronicle readers. I hope you had a good Christmas. I believe 2022 will be a much better year as we confidently move from pandemic to treating COVID as an endemic disease. We cannot be too complacent. A new variant may rear its ugly head, but we are slowly getting to that point, due in part to a brilliant vaccination program and the virus seemingly becoming less virulent. Infections are very high, but hospitalizations and deaths remain very low in comparison to the dark days of this time last year. This is a massive leap forward, and my thanks to all those NHS staff and volunteers who spent Christmas putting jabs in arms across the nation. Schools are open, unlike last January, and I welcome the Education Secretary indicating that GCSEs and A-levels will be back to normal from 2023. Those sitting their exams this year will see their grades pitched between those grades awarded in the teacher assessment of 2021 and those awarded during the full-blown pandemic time of 2020 to take into account disruption to lessons. This staggered approach back to normal is also welcome and fair. The disruption to education across all age groups has been one of the major concerns arising from the pandemic. My New Year resolution this year includes continuing the work to ensure villages in the Meon Valley receive broadband speeds they can use, that motorbike noise and speeding is tackled on the A32 and the A272, and that our businesses and communities can continue the COVID recovery. There is much to do, and I remain committed to achieving these aims. There are big challenges around the cost of living, but inflation is a supply side pandemic shock affecting the whole world that should start to ease as supply lines get back to normal. In the meantime, there are many positives I can share, including a record number of job vacancies, higher wages, and the fastest growth in the G7. Last month, the government published its white paper on social care, entitled People at the Heart of Care. It laid out three objectives for people to have choice, control, and support to live independent lives: that they can access outstanding quality and tailored care and support, that those who need it can find adult social care fair and accessible. This is an important issue, and I would be very grateful for any comments my constituents have on it that I can pass back to ministers. Hampshire County Council has a very good record in social care, but there is room for improvement locally and certainly nationally. This year sees the Queen's Platinum Jubilee, and I hope that committees across the Meon Valley will get involved in the big Jubilee lunch to help celebrate this amazing milestone from an amazing head of state. The lunch is probably best to take place over the Jubilee weekend of the 2nd to the 5th of June, when family, friends and neighbours will be off work. I can remember the Silver Jubilee celebrations in 1977. Like many, I am so grateful our Queen still reigns after 70 years. She is an inspiration. And that's from Flick Drummond, MP, MP of Parliament for the Meon Valley.
This is First Person by George Hayter, and it's entitled Pub Customers Need Some Air. Normally, I'm nervous about going into crowded indoor spaces. I think I might catch COVID and pass it on to other people. Nevertheless, I wanted a change, and the other night, my wife and I decided to risk going out for dinner. As we walked the 1 mile to our nearest pub, we chatted about the hospitality industry, always in the news because pub and restaurant finances are being horribly squeezed by government COVID rules. As we approached the pub, it looked as though none of its windows were open. We were surprised because there has been so much publicity recently about the importance of room ventilation in reducing the spread of the virus. I popped my head in for a check. Then both of us walked round the outside. No, the pub didn't have a single window open. We weren't going to go in, and it was far too cold to eat outside. We decided to try the village's other pub. The other pub did have one window with a couple of top panes ajar, but a single window wasn't enough for a rinse-out current of air. Not really worth the risk, we decided. Still hungry, we reluctantly walked all the way home and made do with baked beans on toast. A few days later, we were invited to join our daughter's family for a pub lunch miles away outside Hampshire. You can probably guess what my wife and I found there. This time, I spoke up, asking one of the managers why there was no compliance with government advice on ventilation. He admitted that all the pub's windows were shut. Customers wanted it that way, he said, but we were welcome to open a window next to our table. I slid the sash of not one but two windows up, but they were still only 1 inch open. The manager came over. He seemed annoyed and, in a performance reminiscent of Basil Fawlty, unfastened a casement window next to our table and pointedly flung it wide open. Government advice to all firms, including pubs, states that an adequate supply of fresh air to enclosed spaces is required by law. Quote, you can improve natural ventilation by fully or partly opening windows, air vents and doors. Don't close doors or windows completely when people are in a naturally ventilated area. Unquote. Pub customers and anyone else with COVID exhale tiny droplets containing the virus, but even gentle ventilation significantly reduces the concentration of the virus in the air. Are the bosses of pub chains doing enough to ensure their staff follow the rules? With life-saving NHS services under threat, I believe most people would be happy to counter a slightly lower temperature by wearing an extra layer when dining out. Perhaps government could help by raising public awareness of the value of a subtle breeze through bars and restaurants. Shortly after the manager had flung open the window by our table, I discreetly reduced the amount that the window was open, and our party relaxed into a happy lunch. We got on well with our waiter, who confirmed that during the pandemic, some customers had complained that open windows were making them cold. A waitress told a similar story and described practical difficulties. Parts of the pub had only doors that opened, and doors were hard to keep closed to just a crack. That meant diners had found themselves in a freezing wind. Such problems remind me that a call for more ventilation is just one of many tough demands that COVID puts on hospitality firms and their staff. They have done a fine job with everything from hand sanitizer to track and trace. But with pub customer numbers down, perhaps I'm not the only potential customer staying away because of poor ventilation. By not letting in any fresh air, pubs could be harming themselves.
There are no special announcements this week, though there will be information about forthcoming events in the following news items. Sunrise is around 8 o'clock in the morning, sunset is around 4:30 in the afternoon. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you yourself have a problem with the recording you have received from us, please telephone the contact number, which is on the key fob attached to the memory stick. We now continue with items of general news interest.
And now an item that's been in the headlines recently, entitled Unacceptable Expert Reacts to Sewage Data. A water company has been criticised for the sheer scale of raw sewage it has dumped into the unique chalk streams in the Winchester area. As previously reported, Southern Water has discharged untreated sewage into Hampshire's fragile chalk streams, including the rivers Itchen, Meon and the River Hamble, totalling nearly 6,994 hours. Data from the government and compiled by the Rivers Trust relates to 15 sewage storm overflows in 2020. Now, the Test and Itchen Association, which is made up of those with an interest in the county's chalk streams, has reacted to the data. Executive Director Jeremy Legg said, "It is unacceptable and profoundly depressing that Hampshire's chalk streams are being consistently and repeatedly polluted by Southern Water. The results are only too evident in the significant declines we have seen in the number and diversity of the invertebrates, the flies and bugs that form the foot of the chalk stream food chain over the last few years. Southern Water need to invest much more in upgrading and replacing their inadequate infrastructure. The Environment Agency, the regulators, need to force the pace and hold them to account. The penalties for false and misleading reporting need to be much more stringent. Work is being done by Southern Water, but far too slowly. Last year, Southern Water was fined a record £90 million for dumping raw sewage into watercourses that flow into the Solent. The company has said that it is investing £2 billion into its wastewater network and a pollution incident reduction plan, which is expected to deliver an 80% reduction in pollution incidents and storm overflows. A Southern Water spokesperson said, "The Rivers Trust is a key partner of Southern Water, and we work together on many crucial environmental programmes and share common goals. The most common cause of releases is storm overflows, when rainwater threatens to overwhelm the system and cause flooding to homes, schools and businesses. Under tightly regulated permits, we release 95% rainwater from overflows to prevent this. This is increasingly unacceptable to customers across the nation, and we hear the message clearly. A major issue in Hampshire is high groundwater, which forces its way into our sewers or public pipes. We have a major project in seven parishes south of Andover where this problem is especially acute. Monitoring and surveying allow us to determine when the risk is increasing, and we use tankers initially to extract from strategic points in the sewer to take away excess for treatment in places with more capacity. If levels continue to rise, then mobile wastewater treatment equipment is installed and used under monitoring by the Environment Agency, thus meeting the key priorities of serving customers, preventing flooding, and protecting the environment."
And this is headed "Post Office Future Uncertain as Premises Under Offer." A building that once housed a post office is now under offer. Upper High Street Post Office closed in November last year following the resignation of the postmaster. Now a sign has appeared in the window stating that the building is under offer. Estate agent Goadsby, which has marketed the premises, has been contacted, but they were unable to provide any information about the future tenants. The shop currently bears empty shelves with a closed sign on the door. On Monday, a post office spokesperson said, "We know how important a post office is to a community. The vacancy is advertised on www.runapostoffice.co.uk. We would welcome interest from local retailers. We're working hard to try to restore service to this area as soon as possible. Post Office Limited is looking for a successful retailer to incorporate a post office local into their existing or proposed businesses in the Upper High Street area."
Prestigious award for Winchester author. A Winchester author who only started writing when she turned 40 has been awarded a prestigious National Book Award. On January the 4th, Claire Fuller was announced as the winner in the novel category in this year's Costa Book Awards for her book Unsettled Ground. The judges described it as a beautiful, nuanced observation of the richness and pain of marginalised life. Claire gained a degree in sculpture from Winchester School of Art, but went on to have a long career in marketing and didn't start writing until she was 40. She has written three novels, Our Endless Numbered Days, which won the Desmond Elliott Prize, Swimming Lessons, which was shortlisted for the RSL Encore Award, and Bitter Orange. Unsettled Ground, shortlisted for the Women's Prize for Fiction 2021, is a portrait of twins living on the fringes of society. She has an MA in Creative and Critical Writing from the University of Winchester and lives in the city with her husband and two children. Claire is one of five authors announced as winners in the UK's most prestigious book prize, which has been running since 2006.
Cathedral welcomes exhibition. Winchester Cathedral will be hosting a new art exhibition later this month. Opening on January the 22nd, the exhibition Sensing the Unseen, Step into Gossart's Adoration, was designed and produced by the National Gallery in London. At the heart of the exhibition, which is touring from the National Gallery for the first time, is a 3D facsimile of Jan Gossart's Adoration of the Kings, a magnificent oil painting from 1501 to 15 that depicts the familiar Christian nativity scene in which shepherds, animals, angels and the three kings have come to worship the infant Christ. The National Gallery has brought the painting to life by creating an immersive digital experience using innovative technology. Alison Evans, Chief Operating Officer at Winchester Cathedral, said, "We are delighted that Winchester Cathedral will be the first venue to host this hugely engaging exhibition from the National Gallery. We want as many people as possible to come and experience this new way of looking at art, where, with the help of digital technology, visitors feel they are transported into Jan Gossart's painting." Located in the north transept of the cathedral, the exhibition space will house the large facsimile painting, spotlit against a black backcloth, flanked by three yurt-like pods. Inside the pods, visitors will encounter a screen featuring a digital image of the painting, which has been sonified using a soundscape comprising ambient sound, spoken word, and music created by sound artist Nick Ryan. The exhibition will be at Winchester Cathedral for 10 weeks until April the 3rd.
Theatre preparing for play. A Winchester theatre are preparing their new production later this month. The Chesil Theatre's latest play is A Fine Bright Day Today by Philip Golding. It's a contemporary play which explores with warmth, understanding and humour the intertwining past and present lives of three very different people. Set in a small English coastal town, this is a delicately constructed story of hope in latter life. Since her husband, a trawler man, was lost at sea more than 30 years ago, Margaret has lived with her daughter, Rebecca. Now Rebecca is moving out to be with her boyfriend, and Margaret faces a future alone. However, when her daughter asks Margaret to take in a lodger, on impulse she agrees. It's not long before he's disturbing her calm routine, dripping rainwater on her clean floors and appearing for breakfast in his boxers. Director David Baldwin said, "This is an entertaining, thoughtful play with a big heart. A Fine Bright Day Today opens on January the 22nd at 7:45 p.m. with performances running until January the 29th. They will have a matinee on January the 23rd at 2:30 p.m. Tickets from £10 are available from chesiltheatre.org.uk.
Marking a decade of hospital trust caring for patients. A healthcare trust has paid tribute to its incredible staff as it celebrates a decade of caring for Hampshire residents. Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust, HHFT, is marking its 10th anniversary this month and over the course of the year celebrating its achievements over the decade and looking ahead with excitement at the years to come. The Trust was formed on January the 9th, 2012, a move which saw Basingstoke and North Hampshire Hospital, Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester, and Andover War Memorial Hospital come together as one trust. A spokesperson for HHFT said the Trust will be showing their appreciation and saying thank you to all the incredible staff, past and present, for their care, compassion and dedication in caring for the local community over the last 10 years. Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust provides hospital services to approximately 600,000 people in Hampshire and parts of West Berkshire. It has around 8,600 staff and a turnover of over £500 million a year. The spokesperson said, "This is something that has never been more important as teams across the hospitals continue to go above and beyond to respond to the pandemic whilst still delivering all the services patients and their families need. Hampshire Hospitals belongs to the community it serves, and so everyone is being encouraged to get involved by sharing their positive stories, messages of thanks, photos and videos of the Trust over the coming days via social media using Happy Birthday HHFT. Members of the public are also being invited to give a special birthday present to their local NHS by taking part in the £10 for HHFT 10 fundraising campaign launched by Hampshire Hospitals Charity. The campaign gives everyone the chance to make a small donation that will make a big difference to HHFT staff and patients by enabling Hampshire Hospitals Charity to fund items and support for staff and patients." Hampshire Hospitals Chief Nurse Julie Dawes said, "We're incredibly proud of what we've achieved in the last 10 years at Hampshire Hospitals and are excited about the years to come."
Watercress Festival set to return. After a two-year hiatus due to the COVID pandemic, the Alsford Watercress Festival will return later this year. The capital of Watercress will once again be welcoming fans of the Salad Leaf from around the world on Sunday, May the 15th, to celebrate the start of the UK watercress season. The festival begins with the newly crowned King and Queen of Watercress parading through the town, dispensing freshly harvested watercress to the crowds. Cookery demos by local and celebrity chefs and speakers will explain its enviable health credentials. Meanwhile, shopping urges for delicious artisanal foods and quirky crafts can be satisfied by visiting the many stalls lining the two main streets, all accompanied to music from local bands playing on stage. People are also invited to take part in the World Watercress Eating Championships. The current champion is Glenn Walsh, who in 2019 successfully ate an 85-gram bag of watercress in 41.6 seconds. Well, you can imagine that. The festival is free to attend, although there are parking fees, and the organisers do urge visitors to give a donation to the Abbey's Heroes, a local children's cancer charity.
Call for fire stations to be vaccination hubs. Fire stations could become vaccination centres once more as the country is urged to scale up its vaccination efforts. Fire Minister Lord Stephen Greenhough has sent a letter to fire services across the country asking for volunteers to help deliver COVID-19 booster jabs. In his letter, Lord Greenhough says, "I'm calling upon you, fire services, to find as many existing and new volunteers across your service as possible to support the huge scaling up of the vaccination booster effort across the country." Hampshire and Isle of Wight Fire and Rescue Service says it's ready, willing and able to help out. "Over the past 2 years, we've been working alongside our health partners in many ways to support the ongoing challenges. We're already working hard to make sure the people who can volunteer are doing so. We have a number of qualified vaccinators who will continue, and it may be that our fire stations become vaccination centres once again." Winchester Fire Service was not used as a vaccination centre.
County fire stations hit by staff shortages. Fire stations across Hampshire have been hit by staff shortages due to the spread of Omicron, seeing firefighters either off sick or self-isolating. The Fire Brigades Union said the situation has even seen one fire station left with no firefighters available for duty. Hampshire and Isle of Wight Fire and Rescue Service said they have robust contingency plans in place and were constantly reviewing their situation. It said that 64 firefighters were off with COVID or self-isolating on January the 3rd, representing 4.4% of the workforce. Area Manager Kevin Evanette, Assistant Director of Operations for Hampshire and Isle of Wight Fire and Rescue Service, said, "Like all emergency services, we have robust contingency plans in place to cover staff absences and keep those plans under review to make sure we can continue to respond when needed. This includes moving firefighters and fire engines around when necessary to maintain cover. All colleagues have been reminded about the importance of protecting themselves and others from COVID-19, and this includes wearing face masks, practicing social distancing where possible, using lateral flow tests, and isolating when necessary." However, Mark Chapman, Regional Secretary for Region 12 of the Fire Brigades Union, issued a stark warning. He said, "The service is at an absolutely threadbare level of cover. As Omicron takes grip across the country, that's something we'll continue to see in Hampshire and the Isle of Wight, and more widely."
New name for City Hub after revamp. A new name will be given to Winchester's Discovery Centre when it reopens next month, following the completion of a major £715,000 refurbishment. The hub in Jury Street will be renamed the Arc Winchester as a result of the partnership between Hampshire County Council and Hampshire Cultural Trust, who will take over operational responsibility for the building from February the 1st. The venue will then open to the public on Friday, February the 18th. The Arc will be a major cultural hub for the city, complementing and enhancing the venue's existing creative offer, whilst retaining Hampshire's busiest library at its core, which will reopen under the name Winchester Library. Paul Sapwell, Chief Executive of Hampshire Cultural Trust, said, "Integral to our partnership and future of Winchester Discovery Centre has been the name of the venue and how it can reflect the broad range of services that we will offer to our many different visitors. The Arc refers to arts, reading and community, and perfectly encapsulates our joint vision. A place where people can come together to experience live performance, art, classes, talks, and access library and community services all together under one roof in the heart of Winchester." Hampshire County Council's Executive Member for Recreation, Heritage and Rural Affairs, Councillor Edward Heron, said, "2022 marks the start of an exciting new chapter for Winchester Discovery Centre following a major refurbishment and a fresh new look. The Arc will offer an exciting programme of cultural events in a welcoming community space, including improved library facilities. This is great news for Winchester and a boost to our region's recovery from COVID-19. The Arc will open with a brand new programme offering exhibitions, events, classes and live performance for all ages and interests, with a range of both ticketed and free activities. Among the well-known names that will be gracing the venue is TV comedian Gary Delaney, while Family Theatre for February half-term will be on offer from Zuko, with two relaxed performances of Messy. The gallery at the Arc, which had previously hosted exhibitions showcasing works from major national and international artists such as J.M.W. Turner, will open with a specially curated exhibition dedicated to artist Eric Ravilius. I hope I've pronounced that correctly. A major new addition to the facilities at the Arc is a brand new digital lab, kitted out with state-of-the-art iMacs, enabling access to the Adobe Suite and other open-source design software. A programme of workshops for those looking to brush up on their skills or develop their existing ones further starts at the beginning of March, with two open days to view the lab's facilities being held on the 19th and 20th of February.
Bench vandalised in public garden, but no police action can be taken. A bench in a public garden in Winchester was vandalised recently. The bench was smashed to pieces in Hyde Abbey Garden last month, with police unable to do anything because the area is not covered by CCTV. Pam Underwood, chairman of Friends of Hyde Abbey Garden, explained the costs involved when benches are vandalised. Pam said that after two large benches were vandalised at the end of 2020, we fundraised and the council paid the rest of the £12,500 total price. The benches in the chapel were replaced in August and the mayor attended a party to welcome the benches. Referring to the most recent incidents, Pam said there were two smaller benches, one in each chapel, and in December last year, the back of one bench was smashed in. The police were notified, but as there were no witnesses or CCTV, the case was closed with no further action. This will cost again about £8,000 to replace both benches. This garden is a city jubilee project. Friends of the Hyde Abbey Garden look after the garden, weeding and trimming the hedges and hollies in metal frames. The council cut the grass and trim the shrubbery. We have asked for CCTV for several years, but as one of many groups wanting CCTV, we have not been successful as yet. Needless to add, this has caused great distress to the gardeners that yobs can do all this damage. Many folk sit in the chapels, having their coffee and meeting friends. It is normally a peaceful area and much enjoyed by the larger community. Hampshire Garden Trust posted on Instagram, "Vandals have been back to Hyde Abbey Gardens in Winchester, this time destroying the remaining original wooden bench in the garden, designed by Kim Wilkie to represent the nave of the ancient Hyde Abbey, which once stood there. Not content with already having destroyed one of the two semicircular benches, leading to both being replaced at considerable cost, they have now reduced to firewood the third long one." The post added, "What pleasure can possibly be had from this destruction?" And there's a photograph of a completely destroyed, what looked like an interesting old wooden bench.
Car crashes into stream and demolishes concrete pillars. A car careered into a stream in a village near Alsford last week. The car demolished concrete pillars and steel railings on its way into the River Itchen opposite the former HH Inn in Cheriton on January the 7th. A spokesperson from Hampshire Constabulary said, "At 10:20 a.m. on January the 7th, we were called to Bybrook in Cheriton, where a car had come off the road and ended up in the stream nearby. No injuries were reported to us." A spokesman from Hampshire Fire and Rescue Service said, "We received a call at 10:35 a.m. and our crew from Winchester Station attended. One car on its side in the water upon arrival and no persons trapped." And accompanying this small piece is the most remarkably dramatic photograph of said car on said side in said stream. Quite remarkable how he achieved to do that is actually beyond me, but there you are.